Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
The key to winning big is using every little bit of knowledge to your advantage. At Odds Checker, we give you the edge. Better odds, better picks, and better offers to make you a better bettor. Why settle for less? Quickly compare the odds at every sportsbook to ensure that you're getting the best price to maximize your return. Visit us at www.oddschecker.com/US. Odds Checker. Sports betting smarter.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's April 24th, 2020. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Hey, no dilly-dallying today, all right? I want to hurry up and get the show over so I can get back to doing nothing.
Yeah, we have a lot of nothing to get done when we get done with this show, so we'll just move it right along. So
just love sitting around doing nothing.
But you know, in all seriousness, last week I talked about how I'm working my way through the James Bond movies, right?
Yeah.
And then people were like, hey, you haven't posted in a couple days. And I'm like, I actually had like 5 days in a row where I had so much to do that I couldn't watch a James Bond movie.
How's that possible?
It was like the best feeling ever. Like, I get done the day and I'm like, wait a minute. I didn't see how Sean Connery was going to get out of a mess today. Now, granted, I didn't do exciting things, but I filled the time otherwise. So,
see, that's the thing. The Sean Connery movies aren't good enough to make you have to go back and watch. When you get to Roger Moore, you're not going to do any work. You're not going to do anything until you get through all the Roger Moore movies.
Start binging it. All right. I believe you.
When it's all said and done, I want you to tell me the best, like, villain name with like the double entendre or something. I want you to tell me who you think's the best, and then you have to watch all of the Austin Powers movies to see all the references that he
I will say, without even, it's been years since I've seen the Austin Powers movies, but just watching the first, I think I'm only four or five movies into the Bonds, I've started to appreciate the Austin Powers more because I remember scenes that now make a lot more sense.
Yes, exactly.
You're right.
Exactly.
When I go back and rewatch those, then I'm really good at that. So.
All right, let's get the poker.
I don't know how I could ever be pussy galore. That's going
to
be like.
I knew you were going to say that. I was waiting for you to say it. I knew that.
No way you could beat that name.
Go ahead.
And the fact that she has a whole army of flying hot chicks. So, 60s were amazing, apparently.
Flying hot chicks. That's like a new band, I think, that has come out. Open up for Wilco.
Oh my god, that might get me to go see Wilco again.
I think it would.
Yeah, actually, I'd go see anybody right now.
That's true. That's true.
Nickelback's playing. Hey, I'm in front row.
Seven Dust. I'm there.
Oh man, we laugh because everything else we got to talk about today is crying. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, we'll cry.
All right. The World Series of Poker has announced that it is postponing the summer series finally to the fall. Though we'll hold some online events to fill the void. Exact dates aren't known yet, but series officials say the postponement will mean changes to some events on the schedule. Those details will be announced when they are finalized.
Yeah, I'm probably going to spill a lot of my thoughts from later topics into this one and back and forth because they're all similar. But it's really annoying when... This is why I hate social media. I don't hate it, but this is what I hate about it. You know, people are like speculating on what things will be. And we're going to talk about that later, about what poker is going to be like. And it just drives me crazy. You have no idea what the World Series is going to do. Do you work? Are you in the? Are you sitting right next to Ty? Are you right next to, you know, these people, even they don't know what they're going to do yet. But yet people are like, oh, all the low buy-in ones are going to be gone, guaranteed. And you don't even know if it's going to be poker in the fall. Why are we wasting our breath on speculating what that World Series event's going to be like? You know, it's one thing to guess about what we think poker's going to be like, but it just drives me crazy. All these people trying to say what's going to happen to the World Series and when, and you don't know. Let them tell you.
Yeah, I can say with all degree and certainty, you're right, we're going to get to this a little bit later in the show. No one knows anything about anything right now.
Yeah, exactly.
That's everybody from the GM of a casino all the way down to some guy that just likes to go and play poker once a week. Nobody knows anything about anything right now.
You can't possibly know.
Yeah. So.
But it's sad. It is sad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. So the item is brief because it has to be brief, right? So, yeah. I mean, they decided, hey, as I think most people were already there, that any kind of event like this is just not going to be possible in May or June or even July. And so rather than cancel it, they want to push it off to a time when they could do it, because as we mentioned, I think last week's show, they've had a lot of convention cancellations, so they have a little bit more freedom. I mean, if they didn't have those cancellations, then I think we would have probably had the first ever World Series cancellation.
Yeah.
Just because they wouldn't have any place to put it. And then people would have all other kinds of things to bitch about, right?
Yeah.
This is the best they can do right now. I mean, they're fortunate as a business that they're able to offer online events. You know, that's something that, I mean, a lot of other businesses are shut down and can't do anything right now. So at least there's something there. I mean, obviously you have to be in one of those states to play it. So that's not very exciting. But yeah, you're right. I mean, once this new schedule comes out, there are going to be a lot of whining because it's not going to be the schedule that they already posted. Mm-hmm. It's just not. Can't be, right?
Right.
So. And they are going to do the best they can to make the best decisions. And again, we will get back to this a little later in the show. But it is a really, really difficult time to be a poker room manager, and particularly a poker tournament director or creator right now, because of all the uncertainty as well, too. So we'll just keep tabs on it and see what happens. But at this point, you know, there's no rush on it, right? if you're able to get to one of these states and play online, go at it and have fun. And wish I was one of you. And if not, you know, we'll just see you in the fall for this event.
One of the things I thought about they might have done was if they were going to try to force it or whatever, was that it's because Harrah's owns it, or Caesars. They have so many properties in Las Vegas that if they didn't have enough convention space at one location, they could have really dug deep into the scheduling and said, okay, we have this room open at Caesars for, you know, October 10th or whatever. You know what I mean? If they absolutely had to, they could probably either, instead of cutting the schedule significantly, they could have maybe looked for other properties and just hosted it, you know, satellite way, you know?
Well, and they may still do that. I mean, that's what we don't know yet.
Right.
I mean, they said changes to some events on the schedule. That didn't mean deletion. It seems like that's probably what's going to happen, but changes can mean anything from different buy-ins, lower guarantees, having those events at a different property. You know, I can see, you know, all 1500 events being held at Caesars and the bigger ones being held somewhere else, or some vice versa. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think really what we're seeing with really literally every company in the world. And I was on I had my entrepreneurship advisory board meeting for my alma mater on Wednesday via Zoom, which I didn't know existed 2 weeks ago. Now I'm on every
Not
day.
Everybody's on it.
And, you know, what I was telling them, I'm like, as entrepreneurs, you got to, I mean, this is devastating right now, but it's also an opportunity, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's an opportunity to do some stuff. And one of the things that group does is they do their big annual events, a September entrepreneurship day thing, where they have workshops and vendors and all that kind of stuff, right?
Right.
So our discussion was, well, what do we do with that now? Because it seems like September's good right now, but you don't know because everything changes every day, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, should we also be planning a virtual version? Should we be planning both? And so my advice at that point is, I mean, this is an opportunity now. So, you know, regardless of whether everything's all clear in September and we can do the event that we're planning now, taking this time to figure out a digital version is fine because we got nothing to do right now, right?
Yeah.
So I think I had no inside knowledge of what Ty and the team at Caesars is thinking on this, but I would say, I'm sorry. Where I was really going with that story was that what the consensus of our board was that if you're going to experiment, if you're going to try something different, this is the year to do it, right? Because people are going to be a little bit more understanding if that new idea tanks.
Yeah,
because you're in such a new kind of world now, right? So, and that's usually a scary thing, right? When you've got a really good established thing going, like the World Series of Poker, and you want to radically shake it up, you know you're going to get a lot of brushback, right? But this is actually a year where you can pull out all those crazy ideas that you had on the cocktail napkin and try them, and some will work and some won't. And the criticism is going to be less than it normally would be. And if those things work, then it becomes better in the future, right? So, again, like I said, I have no inside knowledge of what Ty and the team is doing, but I would be shocked if they're not experimenting or thinking about experimenting with all the kind of ideas that they've developed over the last couple of years that they may have been hesitant to unleash. So
yeah.
It could look very, 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 very different in late fall when it comes. So
sorry, I was mesmerized by your phone. It sounded like a heartbeat when it was going to burn, burn.
It's the vibrating. So.
I know. It sounds like it's like the pulsating or something. It's pretty funny.
Hey, trust me. Like every 4 hours, I check to see if the old ticker's working still. So it's not as active as I used to be. So. Oh, man. All right. So next item, Annie Up Ambassador Chad Holloway, writing for PokerNews.com, has provided one of the biggest updates so far on the PPC Aruba situation, which failed to pay out the top winners from its last event in 2016. Wow. Remember that? Jeez,
yeah.
4 years
ago. Jeez.
When the founders of the tour had not been escrowing entry fees and were using them for business expenses. Earlier this year, Tampa Bay Downs, which hosted domestic events and provided some staff to the Aruba event, reached a settlement in which it admitted no wrongdoing, but nonetheless agreed to an immediate $80,000 settlement to the five affected players and the lawyer and trustee involved in the lawsuit filed against the PPC. Additionally, the two founders of the tour, Brian Olton and Sandy Schwarzbaugh, earlier reached settlements agreeing to each pay $60,000, with $20,000 out of those payments in 50 monthly installments of $400. Olton has completed the bankruptcy process after claiming he had twice as much debt as assets and is recently divorced. Schwarzbaugh did not file for bankruptcy. The combined settlements will result in the five players involved almost being made full further losses.
Hats off to Chad, you know, for getting that news out. I'm sure a lot of people were still wondering about that. Yeah, you know, I almost forgot about it.
Yeah. Have you seen the video from this hilarious Canadian comedian, Julie Nolke, where she's talking to herself 4 months in the future? Did we talk about this on the show?
No, I didn't even heard of it.
Okay, well, definitely go on YouTube and search for Julie Nolke. I think it's Nolke. When you're done with the show, and you'll find this video. She's a comedian, and she talks to herself. Her January 2020 self.
Oh, man.
And it tries to explain what's going on, but because the butterfly effect is when you get in the full details, so she doesn't mention the coronavirus. But there's a scene in there where like she's like, you know, I'm just so worried about the Australian wildfires. And then the future woman's like, the what?
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's kind of what I'm thinking about when one of our friends messaged me about these updates. I'm like, oh, yeah, the PPC. Wow. I forgot about that.
Yeah, me too.
Now, of course, I'm not one of these five players that get cheated out of their money, so I'm sure they haven't forgotten about it since then. So, but, yeah, it's just amazing that stuff falls behind. You know, I mean, these guys should really be thankful that Mike Postel exists. I mean,
right.
Because that really, you know, that became the new cheating scandal now, and then they forgot about him, but information is back. So. I gotta say I'm pleasantly surprised that these five players will get as much back as they did. Doesn't sound like it's gonna get all of it, and it sounds like it could be some time before they get all of it, but I think after this happened, anytime you see something like this happen, you usually think, well, that money's gone, so it's not coming back, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's good that they're getting as much as they are out of this. So, but what a crazy, crazy episode in poker history.
It's going to be weird, too, when you're one of the five players and, like, for the next 4 years, you're going to get $80 check every month. Yeah.
It's kind of like the residuals that Matt Savage gets for being in Lucky You.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Of course, you know, after the lawyer gets their cut and everything, they're probably getting a check for like $40. But it's just weird. You're gonna have this little check show up every month for almost four years, I guess. So
now, assuming they pay it every month too. I mean, they have to do this. They have to make all these monthly payments, or else then the case gets reopened and.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, you know, how much money do they have? So it's you know, again, it's really sad. I don't want to rehash what we talked about back in 2017 when this happened, when we first started talking about this. But these were two really good guys back then. I mean, they're starting their company around the same time we were. And I still remember sitting in the restaurant at the aisle when they first told me about the PPC idea. And they were so excited. And at some point, it just got off the rails and not at all exciting to anybody anymore. So,
yeah.
But it's odd to go back and think about all those chats and good times we had with those folks, and not knowing where the future is going to take them. And poker and taking is a really key word there. So
yeah,
but and I don't know if it's over either. I think there was some other stuff going on, but for the most part, it looks like we've got past that stage. So all right, so. The top of the show, we alluded to this next topic. We've been wanting to talk about it for the last couple of weeks on the show, but we're starting to get questions about what we think poker will look like when we get back to the new normal, everybody's favorite horrible new phrase. and we're starting to see some writers sharing their opinions too. And also this week, the Wynn in Las Vegas put together a 23-page report of new measures, including leaving every other table open, reducing the number of players to each table, and sanitizing seats, chips, and shufflers often. So it's a good time to kind of chat about what we think poker's going to look like here soon. And again, as we said, everything's a guess right now.
Yeah, I'm not being hypocritical here when I start to give you my thoughts. It's just something to talk about on the show. But when people are requesting what they think is going to happen, it's like it either just is confirmation bias for you, or you know what I mean? So if you're like, I'm really hoping that they open by September, and then you ask everybody what they think, and someone says, I think they'll open by September, you're just going to be like, yeah, that's what I think, and you agree with it, but it's not helping you at all. So in this case, I'm not trying to help you or hurt you. We're just saying we have some thoughts on what we think might happen because of, you know, and like you said, some people will want to stay in their homes until a vaccine comes, and there's going to be a lot of people who don't show up at poker rooms until there is a vaccine and they can put it in their bodies.
Right.
So that's going to happen. But for like poker standing wise, I think one thing is if they ever do have tournaments, when they do have the tournaments again, I think guarantees are going to be gone. I don't think they're going to have guarantees, at least not for a while.
Yeah, I talked to one of our clients yesterday. He runs a poker room, and I asked, because I told him we were going to be talking about the show today, and I just wanted to get his thoughts on it. And you know, because that particular room is canceled a lot of series coming up, and I asked him that. I'm like, you know, when you do run your next series, I got to think. The guarantees are going to be the toughest part of it, right? I mean, are you really going to want to put your reputation and really your job on the line to put a big guarantee on an event when you just can't predict how many players are going to want to come?
Yeah.
Because again, it's the biggest thing to think about in this is whenever these casinos open, they're not going to go right back to what they used to be.
Right.
They're just not. As you mentioned, there are people that, for whatever reason, whether they have a health issue or they just don't want to be out until they feel safe to come out, just aren't going to leave their houses. So, and that's fine. But the number of players in the poker room, regardless of whatever this other stuff they do, is going to be less. It's just going to be less for quite a while, probably a year at least from now. And that's going to make it really difficult for you know, because we know how poker players whine, right? So there's going to be players, oh, I'm not going to play that unless that paltry guarantee. But we're going to have to start adjusting your mind to think right now that these fantastic guarantees are gone for a long time.
Yeah.
and not to criticize the poker rooms for not willing to take that risk on until they see people come out. You know, you run your first series, and you could be pleasantly surprised that everybody that isn't worried about their health happens to be a poker player and they're out playing. Then okay, then you can go back in your next series and be more aggressive with those guarantees. But I think until poker managers actually see the people showing up in the rooms, it's really hard to predict, you know, how much risk they want to take on something they don't need to take a risk on, right?
Yeah, the guarantees are going to they'll fade their way back in once they can get a feel of, all right, these are the guys that are showing up every week, and we're getting 60 people, so let's guarantee a prize pool that would be 50, and then that it's just going to slowly work its way in, just like guarantees did in the beginning anyway.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't have guaranteed tournaments, you know, for until a few years, you know.
Well, think about how much we've debated guarantees on the show, and poker journalism has debated them, and how they need to get bigger and bigger, and how they should cause problems. I mean, one of the good things, I think, that come out of this, and there's not very many, but one of the good things is it's kind of a reboot. It's a new way of looking things, and you know, maybe if you're a room that was scared to put those big guarantees on, so you didn't, and maybe lost market share to somebody that was, this is a chance for you to, you know, operate the way you wanted to operate without the pressure, right? So, and then, so maybe we get to a new poker world where guarantees aren't as important as they used to be, and there are benefits to that, negatives too, but there are benefits to that as well, too. So, because we've talked about this before, every poker player loves an overlay, right? But an overlay is almost never good to the poker room, and it's really almost never good for the future of poker either. I mean, if every room is operating at overlays, rooms sort of start closing, right? So, so this is an opportunity to probably get players to readjust their mindset and come and play a tournament because it's a good quality, well run tournament, and not just because of the number on the billboard, right?
Yeah. So, one of the things I thought of was in the beginning, when poker rooms finally start to open and accept players again, I think that the people who show up are probably going to be young, because when you're young, you think you're invincible. Two, you're seeing all these things, stats are saying, you know, people who are at risk are in their 60s or older. So I think the young people are going to show up more than the older people. I think that people who had thought it was a hoax, you know, that it was just a joke, thought it was just a flu, but in a different form, they'll show up. I also think that, you know, we talked about the win saying that they're going to have every other table, but I think a lot of places will just eliminate tables and leave more space.
Right.
Some may see that space and then just shut the room down and put slots in there. But at the same time, you got to sit next to people when you're doing slots. Slot machines aren't single. I mean, they have some that are single, but for the most part, they come in these blocks. So that'd be interesting. I don't know. And I think some will just wait for the vaccine, like we talked about. I think it's going to be a very gradual thing. I mean, Ante Up's going to look a lot different too, I think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we can get to that in a minute. But interestingly, I mean, it's interesting you said that the young people come out and the older folks won't. And you might be right, but one of the fascinating things about this whole thing for me is the number of our older friends who don't care about this at all, who keep inviting us over to their house.
Yeah.
You are in the danger zone, whether you're healthy or not. We are not going to put you at risk to have a glass of wine. I'm sorry. And the number that are just out and seemingly, I mean, I'm not being judgmental here at all. There's too much of that in the world right now anyhow. But, you know, I'll go my morning walk on weekends, and our tennis courts in our park are packed with like 80-year-olds playing tennis.
Wow.
Like doubles. People sitting on the benches waiting to get in. So I think there's a degree, and the more I thought about this, I think kind of the degree is some of those players, those people who have lived through a lot more than we have, right?
Yeah.
They lived through the Great Depression, or the end of it at least, the 60s, all the kinds of crazy stuff. And it's almost like a gnat. Like this whole thing's a gnat. They're just like, all right, it's annoying. I'll do what I need to do, but I don't care. I'll live through all this stuff. So I think you might be surprised at how many the older folks actually come out. But it will be interesting to see that demographic, the demographic split when it comes out.
Yeah.
You know, a couple other things. I mean, obviously we mentioned what the Wynn is thinking. I think if you're a poker room and you're not considering those things that we mentioned, I think you're going to have a tough go of it because I think players are going to be demanding that kind of stuff, right? I did ask the person I was talking to yesterday about tableside dining. I'm really, really curious what type of tableside dining looks like when poker rooms open back up, whether it exists at all, whether it changes. And, you know, the conversation I was having with him was, you know, tableside dining was kind of a staple in California for years. I mean, long before we even started Ante Up, I mean, they had the little carts out there and the waiters that brought your food there. And it was fantastic, right?
Yeah.
But for the rest of the poker world around the country, really, tableside dining is a relatively new development. And so when it started spreading, I remember lots of conversations with friends that said, okay, well, when we have tableside dining in our room, it's not going to be finger foods. We're going to want you to use a fork and a knife so we're not touching the gooey chicken wings and then touching the cards. Well, I don't know any now. I mean, before all this happened, right? I don't know any casino that offered tableside dining that doesn't have gooey chicken wings on the menu.
Yeah.
So it just developed that way. But now when we're coming out of it, I think, again, it's a whole nother look because it's one thing to have every other seat at your table occupied, every other table in your poker room occupied, so you're spreading out. But if you have a guy that's just chowing on chicken wings, I mean, now you're talking saliva and stuff, right? So it's not just the sneezing and the spitting. It's just you're introducing fluids that are going to transmit. So I would be actually really surprised if we don't see a seismic shift in what tableside dining looks like.
It's weird because let's just extrapolate what you just said about, okay, so saliva and all that, but you realize how many times people touch their face in an hour when they're not supposed to.
Oh, yeah.
Or rub their nose or, you know.
I'm at about 400 an hour right now.
Yeah. So, I mean, even if it's the food isn't doing it, when you're right. sitting at the table and you're touching your nose and you got some spittle on your, or you, even if food didn't even do it, even if it's just you sneezing, people sneeze. So, no matter what's going to happen, your fluids are coming out one way or another. And you're touching chips and cards that everyone else is touching. And I know they talked about how they want these clean these chips and everything, but it doesn't matter. Like, there's a spray on TV now. They're trying to capitalize on this, that their disinfectant stays in place for 24 hours. You know? It's just you're never going to be able to spray every single chip for 24 hours and have everything die that touches that chip. It's going to get rubbed off if they're constantly rubbing the chips all day.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think really the reality that poker players need to come up with is poker rooms will be cleaner than they used to be. I think that's a given. They will not be as clean as we want them to be. That's probably a given, right? That's probably the way to look at it, right? So, you know, it's going to be very easy to wipe down the rails and the seats and all that when people get up and leave. That's, you know, pretty easy now and going to be pretty standard. You know, chips will get cleaned more often than they were. You know, the manager I was talking to yesterday says he probably has never cleaned the chips in 8 years.
Yeah,
and now they're going to do, you know, a serious clean, not just wipe them down, but like let them soak in sanitizer before they reopen. And that going forward, they may clean them after every series, just as a matter of habit now because people are going to expect it. So they will be cleaner. But yeah, you're right. You know, in between those cleans, It's just not going to be.
Yeah, well. I mean, even that just that statement right there really does nothing. It, those chips that are sitting in the vault right now or in the cage or whatever, they don't have anything on them now. Nothing survived on that 3 months. So washing them and cleaning them now, yeah, it might give you the impression. It might psychologically make you feel like, oh, the chips are clean. But there's nothing on there that's going to give you anything now anyway. You can put them back in circulation. It's after. You know what I mean? It's just
well,
futile.
And let's be honest about this, and I'm not trying to get any of our listeners riled up, but a lot of what's going on now and a lot of what's going on when we get back to the new normal is going to have a coating of window dressing on it, mm-hmm. won't it? Mm-hmm. It's going to be stuff that people do just so people don't complain that they're not doing it.
Right.
Not that it's actually really drastically helping the situation. But you could be a stubborn poker room manager and say, well, that's not going to help, and fight with your players all day. Or you could just say, I know this is stupid. It's not really going to help, but I'm going to do it so I can tell my players I did it and they won't yell.
Yeah.
And that's a reality of life, not just poker, right? So yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of that kind of stuff. I mean, again, I think also, I mean, a lot of people talk about this, and I think it's interesting, is that this is kind of like our new 9/11 in a way, where air travel was never the same after 9/11.
Right.
But now we are, 19 years in the future almost? And things are sort of going back to what they used to be. They're never going to be what they used to be, but, you know, now we have, you know, TSA pre-check and all this other stuff, which is designed really to get you through security the way you used to go through security.
Yeah.
So it's just going to take time to shift back, but some stuff is better because of it, or more tedious, depending on how you want to look at it. So that's really what poker is going to look like. I mean, like Rounders, we're going to watch Rounders in about 20 years and think of it as we're watching California split now.
Yeah, right.
I mean, just, oh my God, they dealt their own cards back then? Who knew that? Oh my God, look at Mike McDermott. He's eating our KGB's eating an Oreo at the table? What animal is that?
I tell you what, I would be shocked if poker rooms didn't put a vat of antibacterial something or wipes or something. Yeah, and so as soon as you sit at the table, it's required. You can't sit at the table
until you... It's not a bad thing, right? I mean, because a lot of them had Purell things out before, and most people didn't use them, right? The health conscious people did, but most people didn't, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine now when you go back, I don't know, I'm not going to put a percentage on it, but the percentages are probably going to be flipped, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
People are going to be using that Purell like it's, the water from the fountain of youth.
Yeah,
so,
oxygen.
And again, that's a good thing, right? So some good stuff's going to come out of this. I mean, obviously, that's an expense, too. So, you know, maybe it means the rake is more, I don't know, blah, blah, blah. But we'll see what happens with that. But the other interesting thing, or not interesting thing, but one of the things that I think we would be blind to if we didn't say is that there will be fewer poker rooms, right?
Yeah, yeah.
There might be some that just we have dealt their last hand of poker whenever they close during this crisis, that will not reopen. It's just a reality of the finances of it. I mean, casinos have been closed for a month now, more, and will probably be closed for another month. And poker never generates a lot of revenue. So don't be surprised if your favorite poker room is in a casino and doesn't open. There's obviously exceptions to that. You know, I had somebody reach out to me and ask me, what this is going to mean for Florida poker specifically. And Florida is a little bit different. California is the same way too in the card clubs, not the tribal casinos, but you know, you don't have the slot machines. So what you have is poker. I don't anticipate very many Florida poker rooms or California card clubs closing because that's the revenue. But if you're in a casino environment, I think you're going to get a lot of pressure from GMs to say, hey, not only is poker not make a lot of money, but look at all the stuff you got to do to make it safe now, right?
Yeah.
Spreading people out, as you mentioned, taking tables out. It's sad. It's sad for us as in the business and, you know, depending on that kind of revenue for our livelihood. But it's, you know, it's the truth, right?
I really think that, I don't know, if I have to have an optimistic view for us, which I don't think we've actually hit on yet. To me, it would be that when a vaccine does come, I think then people will be, not just people showing up, but I think that the poker rooms will be like, okay, it's just like the flu. The flu kills people, but obviously it's usually older people. This thing kills, it's not, you know, it kills everybody. So I think that if we get a vaccine, I think that these poker rooms will start to be a lot more populated, I think. They might just be sort of staving off the, you know, the slowness of the comeback until, boom, the vaccine comes. And they'll be like, all right, look, you can go get the vaccine now and play. So we're going to relax a lot of this stuff. Because right. If there's a vaccine out there to stop you from getting it and or giving you a milder version of it, which is what everyone hopes for when they get the flu, that they hope they don't get it at all. But if they do, it's a much milder version. So if that ends up happening, I think that these poker rooms will not only come back, but I think they'll thrive because people are just dying to – bad word there – or just can't wait to get into that poker room and play yeah. again.
Well,
you know?
And I think there's also an element of that even before the vaccine. I mean, I think one of the things that's going to be interesting to see is when a switch is flipped of whatever kind it is, whether it's restaurants, bars, bowling alleys, casinos. Yeah, we keep talking about how they're not going to be as busy as they used to be because there's going to be people that don't feel like going out even though they're allowed to, right? But there's also this pent-up frustration with people that just want to get out right now. So what I think is going to be interesting for me to watch, and again, through all those industries, not just ours, is whether there's an initial rush of people that just like, oh, my God, I haven't played poker in 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't care. I'm going to put my mask on. I've got my own Purell. I'm going to go out and I'm going to play 12 hours today. So I think you can make a case that there's going to be a pretty big spike right at the beginning. It's going to drop off probably a lot after that, and then it's going to be that gradual grow back later on when the other people decide it's time to come out and feel safe. So, or it could be wrong with that, but
fingers crossed.
Interesting watch. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's probably lots of other stuff we haven't thought about that's going to change, but those are some of the things that I think we should at least be prepared for that are almost givens,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, and there's just no way for people have been asking us for a while now about when do you think it's going to come back? What's going to happen? What's Antiope going to look like and all that? There's just no way to know until it actually happens. Then you adjust because we're being proactive, but there's nothing really you can know until. Until we see what this return is going to be like and what's going to come of it. And so, fingers crossed, everything works out. And
And players are going to have to adjust, too. I think yeah. Here's an interesting story. I hadn't even shared this with you. I probably should have because you would have laughed, but I'll make you laugh now. I got a call this week from someone who wanted to subscribe to AnteUp, which is always nice. You know, we're in the middle of not publishing right now. So, you know, I'm honest with folks. I'm like, hey, we'll take your subscription. We won't start it until we actually start publishing, blah, blah, blah. But I asked him, you know, whether I had internet access because it's always easier for people to go on our website at AnteUpMagazine.com and subscribe to the magazine there. And he's like, no, I don't. And I'm like, oh, okay. So then I explained how he could send a check, blah, blah, blah. So his next question was, when do you think we're going to get online poker?
He doesn't have a computer.
And I literally tried to pause without laughing. And so then I gave him my thoughts and all that and, you know, how this is probably going to help encourage governments to allow online poker, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I can't tell you when that's going to be. But I wanted to say, you do know when online poker comes to your state, you're going to have to get on the internet to use it. So I'm laughing about that. But, I mean, again, I think that's an adjustment that, you know, the few players out there that don't have an internet access now, I mean, I think it is another given is that online poker in some form is going to be here. We're going to talk about that a little bit in our listener spotlight today, so I won't go too far down that road. But so, you know, if you're one of those holdouts that isn't on the interwebs, doesn't have email, blah, 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 you might want to be taking this opportunity to have your 14-year-old nephew show you how to do all that stuff because it's going to be helpful for you in the world of poker.
Of course, if they're listening to our show, they know how to use the internet anyway. So.
That's true.
We're telling people who don't need to hear it, but yeah.
Very good point. Very good point.
This is normally the part in the show where I message Scott privately and say, hey, are we going too long? But no, we got nothing else to do, so we're going to go through the whole show no matter what. Any updates? Are you jonesing for a poker game during the coronavirus? Do you know how to use the internet?
Do you have internet access?
Rediscover Papes, the AnteUp fans online play money tournament series on PokerStars Play Money site. Available everywhere, but you have to have a computer. Details on how to join can be found at bit.ly/papes. That's PAIPS. Games are on the 6th, 16th, and 26th of every month and rotate disciplines with a main tournament followed by a second chance event. Buy-in for each tournament is 20,000 chips, and PokerStars gives you 15,000 in play chips every 4 hours, so you need to play a little on your own each week in order to be able to buy into both tournaments. Join us, or you can join the AnteUp Fans group Facebook page and post within the group to get feedback on hands or ask any kind of question you want about poker. You can also check out our 11 vintage AnteUp logo designs on merchandise at AnteUpMagazine.com/shop. to check out t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and much more with your choice of Annie Up Magazine, Annie Up PokerCast, or Annie Up Poker Tour logos. Also, we love hearing from you guys, so if you have a hand of the week or a listener spotlight or even a call to floor that you bothered you from the past and you want to try to remember what happened, email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com, or you could post it in that Annie Up Fans group on Facebook. Each week, we spotlight a listener who emails us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call to Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's prize is a 30-minute telephone lesson and workbook from Thomas Gallagher Casino Seminars, specializing in poker odds and math at poker911.net. Comes from Bob James, and he says, can you recommend, say, 3 online sites to play poker? Answered him, but you can answer him too, right? So... Yeah, well, we both answered him, which is weird.
Yeah, so, I mean, he said for 3, so, I mean, I would say if you're looking for the traditional play-for-money ones, really the 3 biggest, I don't know how many more there are out there that you can actually play in the States, would be America's Card Room, one of our great sponsors, Global Poker, a former sponsor, and Ignition Poker, never a sponsor.
Yeah.
Those are the 3 I know. But what I'll add to that is it's interesting. We've gotten a lot of feedback from listeners and readers, at least I have, on trying, looking for other ways to play online, various ways. And there seems to be either a new crop or a newly discovered crop of online sites that aren't for money or have a different business model than the traditional for money online site, that are being explored now by players. And so what I told all those folks is, hey, I haven't heard of this. I don't know about them. If you want to try it out and let me know, and if you give me a thumbs up, I'll be sure to let our listeners know. And to date, I will say I have not got any perfectly glowing responses back. I've got people say parts of them work well, parts of them don't work well. Some of them aren't can't handle the traffic, which makes sense because everybody's looking for these things now. So it's probably a good problem to have, right? But there are a number of newly discovered, as I'm calling them, ways to play poker online out there, depending on what you're looking for.
Yeah. If you do it at America's Card Room, though, use code ANTEUP.
That's right.
ANTEUP. Okay, you know what? We get to complete O'Malley's move today. Always love that. Here comes part 1, and we'll see you on the other side.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're playing a $1, $2 mix of PLO and No Limit Hold'em at one of our regular home games. The table is split evenly, with half of us at least somewhat familiar with the strategy of PLO and the other half not. We bought in for $200 and currently sit with $300. The game is six-handed. We're in the PLO round, and we're playing high only. The blinds post, the under-the-gun folds, and we're in the high jack with the ace of spades, queen of hearts, jack of hearts, tray of spades. This is a decent hand, but since we're not playing 8 or better, I'm not too crazy about the tray. We limp. The cutoff folds, the button calls. This player is new to the game of PLO. In fact, he's so new, we have to keep reminding him that he has to play 2 cards from his hand and 3 on the board. He bought in for $200 and busted, but has recently rebought and currently sits with around a starting stack. The small blind completes and the big blind checks. There's $8 in the pot, and the flop is the king of hearts, tray of diamonds, tray of clubs. This is a pretty decent flop. I think in this game, if anyone had kings pre-flop, they would have let us know. The small blind and big blind both check, and we make a pot-sized bet. The button calls, but the blinds fold. There's $24 in the pot, and the turn is the ace of clubs. So, we filled up. We decide to make a bet of $20 into the pot. Our opponent thinks for a while before raising us another $20. Could this be ace-king? We make the call, and with $104 in the pot, the river is the king of spades. We decide to slow down and check. Our opponent bets $60 into the pot, leaving himself around $90 behind. So, what's the move?
Well, this is why it's always scary playing against players who don't know what they are doing. And normally a player with aces or kings would raise pre-flop, even PLO, but our opponent didn't. He didn't raise us on the flop. either, but did on the turn when we improved. If he didn't have his beat on the flop, he still doesn't. So it seems like we are good here, but I really, really don't know. So to be safe, I'm just going to call.
Yeah, if it were any experienced player, I might have to even fold here. But like you said, given the history of this inexperienced player, it sounds like you could just have a king or the case three. There's a lot in that pot to warrant a call, so I'll do that too. I'm going to call. Here comes part two.
Hello again. Is he misreading his hand? Did he forget the two-card rule? I think against most other opponents, this is a fold. But against him, he could have a naked king. I think this is a call. We toss our call in, expecting this to go either way. Full house, he announces, and tables the king of diamonds, queen of clubs, jack of clubs, nine of hearts. The table stares at his hand, confused, before the dealer announces, you have to play two cards. We table our full house. Our opponent stares at his hand intently before conceding and mucking. Do we have anything to feel bad about here? Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, it pays to know your opponents and their level of play. I may have folded here if I thought he had a better grasp on PLO. I hope to see you on the felt.
Ah, misreading hands. It's what discourages new Omaha players from continuing and frustrates experienced Omaha players when it somehow happens to him. O'Malley asked if he had something to feel bad about. Nope. Sounds like this game is taking great care to help this player learn the game. He'll eventually get it if he sticks with it. But that's a good point because, I mean, again, I love Omaha. I really do. But it is a tough game to learn when you make mistakes like this where you are clearly think you have a full house and then you turn it over and like, nope, you have to use two cards and you still can't get that. So then you're like, forget it. I'll just go back to that easy game. No, I'm at home.
Yeah, never feel bad about winning a pot, especially this way, as it happens all the time. But feel bad if that's the last straw that broke the camel's back and makes them not want to play anymore. But for just winning, you know, hey, you're just playing the way you're supposed to. Does a football player feel bad when the opposing team fumbles and you pick it up and run it back for the winning score? I don't think so.
The other thing I'd say to O'Malley is this hand could have gone completely differently, right? Played it like the way you thought, and then a player misreads their hands and actually has a flush or a straight, something they didn't know they had that's better and wins the pot. So are you going to feel bad? Do you want them to feel bad for you then at that point? No. So it is. It's kind of like the proverbial, we never remember winning with aces, but we always remember losing with aces. So, hey, you got the best of it this time. That's the way poker goes. Just don't whine about it when he wakes up with a hand he didn't know next time.
That's right.
All right, it's time for the Advanced Poker Training. Let me start that over. It's time for the AdvancedPokerTraining.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you'll get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. It is a momentous moment in Antiup PokerCast history, Chris.
It's the last of the Vic G Hands of the Week?
The last of the Vic G Hands of the Week that we have stored up. Now, of course, I know he's going to hear this and send us 47 more. And please do, because that would be nice. We do actually have other hands that people are sending in. So we're not dependent on Vic G like we are dependent on a Paycheck Protection Program loan that we're never going to get. But it's been nice to depend on Vic, so savor this last one for now before he sends his new ones.
All right.
As you remember, the last couple of weeks, these Hands of the Week are all been coming from Biloxi, Mississippi, during one of their major poker series, and where Vic is playing 1-3 no limit. He says, this time, it's after 2 a.m., my table broke, and I moved to a six-handed table. I've only witnessed a few hands, so no strong reads on anyone's play. Since the buy-in is uncapped, it's also impossible to tell who is ahead based solely on their stack size. We start the hand with 1,200, and the villain in this hand, who we did see call down a previous hand only to lose the pot with second pair, and a middling kicker starts with 600. I have the rest of the table covered. Opening raises of $15 to $23 in this 1-3 uncapped game are not uncommon. Our villain in middle position opens for $20, and it's folded to us in a small blind, holding the six of hearts, six of clubs.
I always have that pause because I'm writing it as we're... that's interesting. I mean, you can totally just set mine. You know, especially if you're in the blinds, no one's going to put you on a set if you flop it, you check to them, and then walk the dog. If becomes all unders. You know, you might. And the other thing, too, is I don't know. Sometimes when they give you the details, they might be giving them to misdirect you or whatever. But then the guy showed down, you know, second pair and lost. So maybe he's trying to make us think, oh, if, you know, fives or sevens get there, you know, eight, I don't know. Whatever. So it's tough to know. But I'm basically, if you don't know much about this player and he raised, and where do you raise from again?
Middle position.
Middle position. So, I mean, he could have a, you know, Jack 10 for all we know. So we're going to have to assume that this guy has overs to us. Could even be an over pair to us. Could be eights, could be tens. Who knows? There's no way to know anything at this point. I don't like to get too frisky with people. I don't know how they play when I'm out of position. I'd rather be in position when I'm trying to learn how people play. But I wouldn't fault him for raising here and to get some info out of this guy, see how he's going to play in the future. But it is six-handed, so he could be opening with weaker hands. So our sixes could be the nuts, for all I know. Lot to consider. But generally, when I'm at a new table, I kind of start in slow. I don't get so aggressive in the beginning. And when it's shorthanded, you know, obviously the hands get stronger. But I think I'm just going to call the raise and then gauge it from there. I might do a little Phil Hellmuth, you know, and staring into the eyes of his, you know, whatever, and try to see if there's some sort of reaction to a flop, check blind kind of thing, do something like that. That might be kind of fun. But really, I don't see myself getting too aggressive in a brand new table with just sixes, and I don't know what this guy is like, what he raises with. Just because we saw him call down a hand at the end with second pair doesn't mean that he's not playing ABC poker and raising with jacks here or something. So I'm going to just call.
Yeah, I think this is an easy call. I don't see much reason to do anything else. Folding is super tight here. We're sitting with $1,200, and it's a $20 raise. I mean, this is a stackable hand we have here, so we're going to take a flyer on it and try to stack them at $20. And raising at this point when we don't have any information just seems kind of reckless to raise with a small pair and a small blind. So to me, this is perfect set mining time. We have the perfect stack to set mine. $20 it is. I'm in. And let's hope we hit our set.
Yeah.
All right, our hero says we'll be out of position through the rest of the hand, but we may be ahead of the villain with our small pair at this point. The big blind sits with tall stacks of red chips, and she seems to be a serious player. We really don't know if a raise is necessary to have her fold, but of more concern is the villain. If he doesn't believe our raise, just wants to see a flop, or simply has the goods, a raise from the small blind isn't going to get him to fold. We take the safe route and opt to call the extra $19. The big blind gives up her $3 blind, and we're heads up to the flop. With $37 in the pot after the rake, we see a flop of ace of hearts, 10 of spades, 6 of diamonds.
Nice.
See, the action is on us.
Well, again, I think that it would be foolish just betting this guy unless we absolutely knew the type of player he was. I often think of when I see something like this and I know that back in the day, Doyle would say you bet into this guy because he's supposed to have a hand here. But it's not a full table. He's not under the gun. You know what I mean? It's not one of those, he has to have aces, kings, or ace, king here, and you flop to set, and you're hoping that you know, he has ace, king, and has top pair, top kicker. It's one of those, he could have anything. He could have jack 10, which is second pair, like he did before. So you might want to just check to him and let him just sort of, you know, bet into you a little, bet out, and then I feel like betting out now is a mistake. And it's not a check raise either. I think it's more of a, it would be one thing if it was two pair, a baby two pair or something like that, I might check raise. But in this case, I feel like he's supposed to have something like a decent ace here because it got to him, you know, two bets in or two folds in, and he decided, hey, I got ace 10 here. I might raise. He got two pair. That'd be great. You know? So, I don't know. He could have something like Jack 10 and have middle pair, but I'm going to check to him since I'm in the blinds. And he might think we have an ace, too. That's the bad thing. But we're hoping he has the ace and hits it. But I'm not betting.
Yeah, I think, again, there's no justification for betting here and little justification for check raising as well, too. You know, we hit our set, so we got him pretty much dead to rights unless he was sitting on aces or tens. And then he's got us dead to rights, which is not good, right? So we want him to drive the action here, hoping he has an ace, but only one.
Because
because that would be fantastic right now. If he doesn't have an ace, then this flop is probably not as exciting for us as we think it is, because the action's going to be pretty slow going forward. But I want to, you know, let him drive the action here. So if we bet here, we could be representing the ace, which if you think about it, if you wanted to take control of this hand, we didn't have the set, that would be the way to do it, to show, hey, we have an ace, and if you don't have an ace, get out of my pot. We don't want him out of this pot. We want him to put all his money in this pot. So definitely checking here, calling whatever he bets. If he doesn't bet, then I'm going to have to bet on the turn and try to, you know, get moving. But at this point, I'm going to let him fire. And if he fires, then I'll check again on the turn, let him fire again, and hopefully find a way to get all 600 of us stacked here. So
let's do it.
All right. Vic says, we're hoping the villain has a big ace in their hand. If he doesn't and we lead out, he may likely fold, so we opt to slow play this hand and check.
Yay.
Villain obliges and tosses in two green $25 chips. Action's back on us. What's the move?
I like a call. I mean, it's a dangerous board if he had something like king, queen, and can hit a gutter on us, but I don't think he's betting 50 with king, queen. I think he's afraid of that ace, and he's not. So I don't think he's afraid of the ace. I think he likes the ace. I don't know if he's savvy enough to actually bet a set here, because we're in the blinds and he's probably going to lose us. So I think he's probably got something precarious like ace jack or something, or ace nine, and he's just trying to get some money for it and getting a feel for it. And I think I'm just going to call. There's no way I'm going to try to scare this guy off right now. If he had a set, I think he would check. So I think we're really good here.
Yeah, and there's a few danger cards that can come. You mentioned some of the Broadway cards, but none of those holdings really make a terrible amount of sense here. There's no flush draw out there right now. So, you know, unless we're up against one of those other two sets, I think we're pretty good here. So I'm just going to call and let him fire again on the turn.
Okay.
All right. Our hero says, with no real danger other than the two Broadway cards, we opt to call, as a check raise may scare him off. Not sure if we're losing value here, but this is a new table, and I'm still feeling out the players. Well, without seeing how the rest of the hand goes, I don't think you're losing any value here. I mean,
yeah.
Hindsight is 20/20. My new horrible phrase. with 137 in the pot, the turn is the jack of clubs. So our board now is ace of hearts, ten of spades, six of diamonds, jack of clubs, and we are first to act again.
Yeah, see this... I'm not scared of it, but this is what I was talking about. You know, somebody has king-queen, they take a stab at it, now they've hit a gutter. But we could hope he has jack-10, took a stab at it with the tens, saw us call, and now he's hit two pair, and he's going to go crazy. So I still don't mind checking again. I really don't. I feel like if he checks now, we'll wake up on the river and whatever, but I feel like he might still put a bet out, especially if he hit jack-10 or ace-jack, like I talked about. So
he doesn't give us any indication that he's not going to bet, so...
Right.
I mean, let's assume he is. And, you know, if he has king-queen, then we're still going to call here and have to hope the boat up. I mean, I'm not going to be worried about that one particular hand. I mean, I guess it's a couple particular hands now. But, yeah, I'm checking and calling. So.
All right.
Let's see. With 137 the pot. Oh, I'm sorry. I said that. He says this completes a Broadway draw if our opponent was playing king-queen. Board just got a bit scarier. With our opponent's $50 flop bet, we're leaning towards him having an ace in his hand. Since he raised from middle position, it's probably a big ace. He may now have picked up a gut shot straight draw or made aces up. That would be fantastic if he had ace-jack. Just in case it's the former, we decide to lead out with a bet of 100 and toss a black chip into the pot. Our villain takes about 5 seconds before making the call.
Wow. One of the things I'll disagree with is that I would not expect a big ace from somebody in the middle position of six-handed. Now six-handed, you take away the first three or four betting spots, you know what I mean? And then your middle position. So, I mean, here he's literally late position at a full table, so he could be playing anything. I don't think it's going to be a big ace. I mean, I don't think it needs to be a big ace. It could be anything. He could be just walking us now. You know, we don't know. But I would love for him to have Jack 10 here and then have, you know, a blank on the river. So, I don't know what I think of the call. The call could be walking the dog. If he had two pair, he might raise us. So he might be walking us. I might be cautious on the river now, believe it or not.
Yeah. I would have liked him to take a little bit more time on thinking on that bet. Again, I wouldn't have made that bet, but since we did, I would want him to think a little bit more. The fact that he just quickly called makes me wonder whether now he's walking us back.
Yeah.
Or he could just be in the I'm going to call anything down because I've got a big ace kind of hand. I hope it's that, not the other. But
yeah, imagine, let's just, I mean, we usually go back at the end, but let's go back for a second. Imagine he has 10-10. He hits his set. Does he bet out with three tens? Probably not. Ace-ace? Probably not. King-queen? This is where it might be something, because I would raise with king-queen in middle position at a six-handed table. So flop comes, you're in the blinds, you call my raise hoping to whatever. So I'm going to c-bet to just take down this raised pot like every person on the planet does. You now call my 50. Now bingo, bango, bongo, Ricky Tiki Tavi. On the turn, I hit my gutter for Broadway that I wasn't even trying to hit. I was just trying to steal the pot or take the pot down. Now you bet into me. Oh, I'm great. Bet into me. Now I'm calling 100 because he's not drawn. So I would be really cautious on this turn by revisiting this hand at this point. I know it's three sixes. The worst part's going to be if a 10 or a jack comes on the river and we're going to have a full house and this guy's got jack 10 or ace 10 or whatever it is that gives him the boat. So that's scary to me. So I really think I'm going to – I would like some information on how this guy's acting too, which is hard to – you know, what's he going through? What's his thought process? What's he look like when that – when that turn came. So I'm a little worried. Believe it or not, three sixes in a big pot like this, out of position, that turn card, even if it's a blank, I'm still going to be happy to check call. You know, if the guy shoves, you got three sixes, you're probably calling. But if there's anything that makes you think you're beat, I would take it under serious consideration.
Absolutely. All right, with 337 in the pot, the river is the queen of hearts, making our final board. The ace of hearts, ten of spades, six of diamonds, jack of clubs, queen of hearts, and Vic says yuck.
Yuck is right. king.
King has his beat now, so that's rough. So he says, we're still the first to act. This is an ugly river for us. He could easily have started the hand with ace king or ace queen, and one of these two holdings have just sacked that out on us. Here are the questions we need to answer, and by we, I mean Chris and Scott. One, should we maintain the lead in the betting and make a bet equal to amount we're willing to call? Two, if this is a check call scenario, how much should we be willing to call? He has about 430 left in his stack. And I guess those are the two options.
Well, I have to agree with the... If I were to sit back and say, if I check, what would I call when he bets? If I'm going to do that, I'm going to lose the hand anyway if I'm losing the hand. You know what I mean? So I'm going to probably bet that amount. I probably am. It's scary, but I'm probably going to bet that amount. So if it's, you know, let's say I would call 100 here. Maybe I make a bet of 100. It's a third of the pot. And then if the guy raises, then I know I'm probably beat, and then I'll get out of it. If you check and then the guy shoves, now, you know, you're looking at $300 or $400 that now you're put to the test for a random king. But if you can sort of stop the bleeding, make it look like maybe you're value betting a king, and the guy folds his set of tens or something weird.
Or just calls his own king.
Just calls his own king, and then, okay, so... But, you know, if he's got the nuts, he's probably going to raise you because they'll probably say, hey, you need to raise.
Well, I mean, I think that's the situation we're in now. If he's got a king, we're probably screwed either way. but I'm wondering if it's better to throw in that $100 blocking bet. That's what we bet the last street, right?
Yeah.
It was a little less than third of pot, so it looks like we're trying to get value out of the hand. And hope if he has a king that he thinks we've got the same thing and it's not worth raising. I mean, I don't know how many players would do that, but if we check, then he sets the price. I would rather put the 100 in, I guess. But this is difficult because I wouldn't have bet the turn. Had we not bet the turn, then we wouldn't be in this spot right now, because he's still guessing what we're having. Now, obviously, he still has a king. He's still going to make a decent-sized bet here, I would think. What I don't know is if we check here, we're gonna face a pretty big bet. And if we bet out, does that entice him to raise more than he would have bet? So that's rough. I don't know what to say about that.
If I'm willing to call 100, I should probably bet the 100 as a blocking bet.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. I think blocking bet's probably the best to go. And you know, and hopefully we're still ahead. I mean, I'm not giving up on this hand. I mean, you know, and if he doesn't have a king, maybe that $100 bet is something he's willing to call too. You know,
yeah,
you think that
two
way,
pair
right?
Or something.
If you think about all the scenarios, that seems to be the best way to go. I think it's, we have an outside chance of getting him just to call with a better hand. We have a pretty good chance of him calling with a weaker hand. And the other scenarios put us to a bigger test than we're putting him to.
The only thing about a check is that if you've got a real good read on the guy and you think he doesn't really have a king, but he might take a stab at it to bluff. You know, that's the only way you'll get money out of this guy. I think it's hard to bet 100 if he doesn't have a king for him to call. So it's weird. It's a weird situation. Maybe we revisit the blocking bet.
I don't think he's as worried about the queen as we were. I mean, obviously we bet out on the turn, so maybe he has to now give us credit for king queen there, and the queen is a counterfeit card for us, right? But otherwise, I'm having trouble having him put us on a different king hand that we just now got a straight. Either we had the straight in the turn, or this, or we don't have a straight. I would think, but
well, if he thought we had the straight, he's not calling.
Well, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Right.
He's not calling the turn.
But what I'm saying is that the way we play this, it doesn't make sense for us to now have a straight on the river. We either have the straight on the turn, or we don't have it right now.
Hmm. Yeah,
whereas he's the opposite. He's the opposite, I think, that this queen really could have helped if he was playing some kind of king 10 hand.
Yeah. It could have been ace king the whole way. He could have just been like, hey, I got top pair, top
kicker.
Ace king,
yeah, same way, absolutely, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And then now I've picked up a gut or two, and you're betting 100 into me. I don't believe you. You're in the blinds. I still have top pair, top kicker, and I played a hand earlier where I called down with second pair, so why wouldn't I call a top pair, top kicker here? And now he's backed into the Broadway. I don't know. I'm kind of not liking my blocking bet anymore. I feel like no one calls that bet, and no one folds to it with a better hand. You know what I mean? The person who folds is going to have a worse hand than us, and the person who has the better hand is going to raise us. So I don't know if that $100 actually makes sense now. I wouldn't have taken this much time at the table, but you know, now that we've taken this much time about it, I don't see any benefit of betting.
I think at a 1-3 table, an ace 10 is going to call here, an ace 6 is going to call here, an ace jack is going to call here for $100.
You think?
I think.
$100. You only have 400 or 300 left. You're betting a third or a quarter of your stack on a call when only one card beats you. When one card beats you, I mean. So I don't know. That's interesting.
It's less likely for us than it is for him. Is what I keep going back to. I mean, but
The hard part is if you check and then he just shoves on you, and then you're like, now
well, that's the worst thing because now you're not going to want to call that 337. So you're out of his hand. I think the 100 is the best path forward to see what he has and hopefully win this pot.
I don't want to commit to an answer here.
We can't call that 337, right? We just can't.
No, I don't think you can unless he knows he's bluffing.
Left. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he has less than that. He started with 600. No.
You literally can only beat a bluff now because you can't beat a set of aces. You can't beat a set of tens. You can't beat a set of jacks.
We can beat jack 10, which is possible. We can beat ace 10. We can beat ace 6. All three of those. We can beat ace queen. We got a lot of two pair hands here that are very possible that, queen jack, queen 10.
Yeah, I guess you have to bet.
I mean, I have to go back and play the hand out to see whether those are realistic or not. But two pair of hands will definitely call $100 here.
If you don't bet, he can be confident that whatever hand he has now is good, and he might bet. And then you might have to be up against, do I call? You know, if he makes a $100 bet, you're going to call it. If he shoves, now you got to think, geez. If he had a king, would he really show up?
If he was sitting on a set of aces or a set of tens, he's not liking this card either right now.
Right.
So now I don't know if the $100 bet's going to push him off of those hands, but we're sitting here debating whether to make a $100 bet, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It is possible that, I mean, if you run this through a bunch of simulators, like maybe an advancedpokertraining.com, it would be interesting to see how often somebody would fold a set of aces or set of tens here to a $100 bet. And I bet it happens more than we think it would.
Yeah. Or jacks or queens. I mean, the guy could have, you know, turned a set of jacks and then he just calls because he made that first bet, you know, thinking I'm just going to steal the pot here from a big blind.
Yeah.
And then, you know, with the, and then and then he turns his set of jacks. So there are some hands here that we don't beat that we could get to fold.
Yeah, if we absolutely.
Bet. So yeah. I don't know. All right, let's bet the 100.
You're back on the blocking pad now, aren't you?
Yeah, let's bet the 100.
All right, let's see what Vic's going to do here.
Must be the quarantine that's making me act this way.
All right, Vic says, we offer the ladder and wrap the table. Without much hesitation, the villain flicks six green $25 chips into the pot, which represents just under a half-size bet. What's the move?
Yeah, I'm going to probably – well, it depends. Like I said, if I would have thought ahead of time that I would call 150, then I would call 150. But that really feels like a value bet. Seems like a lot of time in Vic's hands, though. He makes the call and the guy has to pair or something because it's just the way the hands go, and that's why he likes to send them in. But I don't know. It's brutal. It was a brutal river, but that's now 487 in the pot, you know, with a set of sixes. It's tough. Maybe he's doing the same thing. He's trying to get us to fold a better hand, and he has aces up. So if I was going to bet 100, I'd probably call 150. So let's just call.
Yeah, at this point, I don't think there's much difference in that, especially if there are stack size. So, you know, I think we should be happy that he didn't bet more there where he could have. So let's find out. Again, nothing else. We haven't been at this table long. We want to be here for a while. So
yeah.
We came this far. So for an extra 150, again, 150 is what we're paying for the information, not the whatever. 400 we have invested at this point.
Yeah, I'm just glad the guy didn't shove, to be honest with you. Now I can, and then I can also kind of get a better feel of how he plays. I know it's a lot, but, well, last week he was calling 60 with deuces to get an idea. So this is 90 more, but you got a lot more money in the pot and a lot more riding on it, I think. So let's call.
All right, Vic says, we hate this bet size, I think. If he were to have moved all in, I think we can easily fold. But this looks like a value bet. We go into the tank for about a minute. I think it's 50-50. I doubt he would have played the hand like this with pocket 10s through aces, so it's either ace-king or ace-queen. We're getting 3-1 on the call, so the mass says the call. We do. Our opponent shows us the ace of clubs, queen of diamonds.
Yay!
A bottom set of sixes drags in a nice 637 pot.
Woo. Yeah. Yeah, see, that's what we were saying, is that we knew sort of at the end that it's probably going to be two pair. That's generally, Vic doesn't usually lose his hands, and that's just the way it felt. That's not why I called, though. I really felt like the math was there to call, and you know, he probably said if you had a king, you wouldn't check, and so he value bet his ace queen and then lost. Yeah, interesting. Ace queen played it the way that ace queen would have played that hand. I mean, you get ace queen in middle position of a six handed, you're going to raise with it. You're going to hit the ace and bet it. And then when somebody bets into us, we still only have one pair, but there's no way they're getting rid of the possible gutter for a Broadway and top pair second kicker. So he calls, and we said he had a history of calling with not great hands.
Yeah.
And then the river gives him two pairs. So, I mean, I guess he played it the way I would have played it with ace-queen. I probably would have played it that way. So, yeah. Pretty
and
straightforward.
We got $50 more out of him playing it the way Vic did than we did. So. Yeah,
and Vic's smarter than we are, that's why. All right, stay home, stay safe. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.